The reading this morning is from Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verses 1 to 14. The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What does man gain by all the toil of which he toils under the sun? A generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun goes down and hastens to the place where it rises. The wind blows to the south and goes round to the north. Round and round goes the wind, and on its circuit the winds return. All streams run to the sea, but the sea is not full. To the place where the streams flow, there they flow again. All things are full of weariness, and man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. What has been is what will be, and what has been done is what will be done, and there is nothing new under the sun. Is there a thing of which it is said, see, this is new? It has been already in the ages before us. There is no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of later things yet to be among those who come after. I, the preacher, have been king over Israel in Jerusalem, and I applied my heart to seek and to search out by wisdom all that is done under heaven. It is an unhappy business that God has given to the children of man to be busy with. I have seen everything that is done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and a striving after wind.
Hi guys, it's good to see you today, and I hope the last few days have been okay. I hope, even though not what many of us wanted for the Christmas weekend, that there have been some blessings in amongst it. The shortest play in the world is called Breath. It was written by Samuel Beckett. Its performance time varies from between 24 to 60 seconds. There are no characters, no dialogues or scenes. All the audience see is rubbish strewn across a stage. They hear someone breathe in and then breathe out. And then there's a scream. And then that's the end. Apparently Beckett wrote it in his minimalist phase. And his point was, that's life. You breathe in, you breathe out, that's it. If you paid money to go and see it at the theatre, you might be asking for your money back. And that's probably also the point as well. Life can be like that. 27th of December, I thought it would be a good moment for us in what may be a depressing weekend to get a little bit philosophical. So this is Christmas, and what have you done? John Lennon, sounding more relevant than ever. Those words could also have come from the character verse 1 calls the preacher. Meet the philosopher of the Bible. He's paying us a visit at the end of a shocking year to empathize with our angst. Verse 3. What does man gain by all the toil at which he toils under the sun? What's the point of everything, says Mr. Preacher? And the thing that makes him get all philosophical is because life feels a bit like verse 2. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. He's not using the word vanity in the sense of standing in front of the mirror all day, checking yourself out. In Hebrew, the word vanity means vapor. It's like looking at your breath on a cold day. There's something there, but when you try to grab it, it's elusive. Or like bubbles. I don't know if you ever have to get involved with childcare. If you do anytime soon, can I recommend the bubbles? Sometimes even more effective than the iPad and the screens in their hypnotic powers. But you see how it's like with bubbles? There's a real thing there, but the small child goes to grab them and there's nothing there. And Mr. Preacher says we're all basically in the same business as the small child, whether the thing you're grabbing for is work or money or relationships. you're probably onto something, but verse 14, I've seen everything that's done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and a striving after the wind. It's also fleeting. And the preacher really feels the meaningless of it all, because the world just seems to him to go round and round in these endless repetitive cycles. Verse 4, a generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun goes down and hastens to the place where it rises. The wind blows to the south and goes round to the north. Round and round goes the wind, and on its circuits the wind returns. All streams run to the sea, but the sea is not full. Do you get it? The sun comes up, the sun goes down, the wind goes round and round and round. Water flows from the streams to the sea, but it then ends up back in the streams and then goes back to the sea. You ever feel like you're caught up in this sequence, like you're on a fairground carousel? If you want a bit of variety to spice up life, be careful what you wish for. Global pandemic, to mix it up a bit, anyone? Actually, of course, at the level of our daily routine, this abnormal year has just made the cycles feel even more monotonous for many of us. You can't even remember what day of the week it is a lot of the time, because they're all blur's day. You wake up, you switch on the computer, you work, you eat, you watch the TV, you switch off the computer, you go to bed, you wake up, switch on the computer, you work, you eat, switch on the TV, switch off the computer, you go to bed. It's an interesting life, isn't it? And if you're in any doubt that we're just trapped in the cycle, notice what verse 9 says. What has been is what will be, and what has been done is what will be done, and there's nothing new under the sun. Is there a thing of which it is said, see, this is new? It has been already in the ages before us. 2020 wasn't actually a unique year. There have been pandemics before. They are part of the cycle as well. Think of films. I mean, every single plotline in film is a rehash of something from Shakespeare or Star Wars. Nothing new under the sun. And of course, that doesn't mean that they had smartphones or Bluetooth back in the olden days. And of course, it doesn't mean that we haven't had unbelievable, life-changing advances. Speed at which these vaccines are emerging, how grateful we are. And at the level of our personal lives, we make real significant achievements, some of us. But the basic stuff that the preacher goes on to talk about in the rest of Ecclesiastes, so happiness and friendship, the desire to do work that has meaning, to defeat death, to see justice done, none of those instincts really change. All of those things have been chased and frustrated before. And maybe one of the reasons that we've taken this pandemic so hard is that we thought we'd moved on from that kind of vulnerability. Humbling to be shown that we're part of the cycle as well. Verse 11 is the final depressing nail in the coffin. There's no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of later things yet to be among those who come after them. You know, in your workplace, when you leave, you'd be shocked at how quickly it will all move on and people will never even know who you were or that you worked there. Even in your family, it will just be a couple of generations and they won't even remember your first name. Uncle so-and-so, who was he again? Samuel Beckett was on to something. Your life is a breath. You can aspire to be the healthiest, most successful, most loved 100-year-old in history, but then you will die. And unless you're one in a million, there won't even be a plaque outside a house in Bloomsbury saying so-and-so used to live here. They'll be too busy to make a plaque for you, because they'll all just be getting on with the next round of the cycle. And soon no one will even remember that you ever existed at all. cheerful, isn't it? Glad you tuned in. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Now, why is this even in the Bible? And why did I think this would be helpful for us on a weekend where some of us are already feeling pretty low? This is not a big, nasty, I told you so. In part, it's meant to be encouraging that if you've experienced the angst and just the existential, what's the point of it all recently, God in his word gets you. This is actually one of the unique things about the Bible, because the world of religion will often want us either to pretend that the pain and frustration isn't real, or we have to endure it in a very fatalistic way. Wonderfully, God, our Father in heaven, feels with us all the ways that we will feel and all the frustrations that we experience in this life under the sun. I think this could be quite powerful to show to friends who are feeling what's the point of it all at the moment. Yeah, normal times it might be that you'd have to go round the cycle quite a few times. Have to become a bit of a grumpy old man like me before you would share Mr. Preacher's view. Sadly, at the moment, you don't have to have had that long a view to be able to relate, because the shine's already come off your new London job, perhaps. You haven't even made it into the office yet. And I think this could be important as we move into what we hope and pray will be a more optimistic phase, as we hope the year 21 will take us into. Everyone will be hoping that 2020 turned out to be the worst year of their life. Mr. Preacher would offer us a word of caution. Don't be naive, he would say. The new normal may be a better normal, but it will still disappoint you and frustrate you and just bore you, to be honest, in the end as well. I'm afraid that this is all as true for Christians in our labor for the Lord. We need the book of Ecclesiastes, all of us, to give us a sense of what is really possible and achievable out of this world. Because verse 13 here in chapter 1 hints at something really important about this world from the early chapters of the Bible. Verse 13, as I applied my heart to seek and to search out by wisdom all that is done under heaven, it is an unhappy business that God has given the children of man to be busy with. See, it's not just that life is frustrating, it's frustrated as part of what God has given us over to in his just judgment. That means that the vanity is structurally unavoidable now, I'm afraid. This is a book not just to keep us real, but to humble us and to drive us to our Maker looking for bigger answers. Thank the Lord there are answers. There aren't many here in this reading or in Ecclesiastes generally, to be honest. And the thing I'd love you to go away with from today is just chewing on the thought of imagining there wasn't more to say about any of it than this. Quite haunting thought, isn't it? To be able to articulate so poetically the human condition, but that there's nothing more we can say. Be brave in the face of the absurdity of it all, says atheism. Make up your own meaning in among it, say other worldviews. But it takes people to some very dark places when they reflect seriously on the vanity of it all. Maybe you've been to some of those dark places yourself this year. And I know that we know the Bible does have more to say, but just imagine that there weren't any more answers. We don't deserve there to be anything more to say other than meaninglessness. Tolstoy said at one point in his life, the only absolute knowledge attainable is that life is meaningless. Live with that thought. Imagine that it's true. Till you feel haunted. See, Ecclesiastes really wants us to feel it. Wants us to be gasping for there to be more in life. It's almost tempting for me just to end the talk there. There's just a hint of the path to answers here in this phrase that comes up repeatedly through this reading. Under the sun means this sphere that we exist in under the sky. See, if your only grid for making sense of life, the world and the universe is everything that material that happens under the sun, then you'll never find ultimate meaning. Could it be that there's more beyond? Could it be that there's a God beyond who made you and me and the sun and everything else? Could it be that God has set eternity in the hearts of people? That's another phrase from Ecclesiastes. It taps into one of the unique characteristics of human beings. One author has called us cosmic orphans in the universe for the way that humanity alone feel this angst. Your dog isn't worried about any of these big questions. Could it be that this search for meaning in life comes from a God-given instinct that longs, even knows, there should be more? And what a sheer and utter relief that there was another preacher. He came about 1,000 years after this Mr. Preacher. He was also a king in Jerusalem. We celebrated his birth just the other day. And he talked about a time when things wouldn't be unremembered or seem in vain or be frustrated or frustrating. He talked about a vision for a kind of eternal life that even death itself wouldn't be able to make a mockery of in the end. Ecclesiastes says, all is vanity. Jesus Christ says, I have come that they may have life.